And welcome back to Dad's on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network from the studios of Fine Music 102.5. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood and masculinity. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our guest today is Justin Trottier, who is the chair of the Canadian Centre for Men and Families Operations Committee, and a board member of the Canadian Association for Equality, or CAFE as it is known, and that's what we'll be speaking to him about today. Justin is the founder of the Centre for Inquiry Canada, a national educational charitable organisation advancing science literacy, and Justin speaks regularly in the media in defence of fundamental freedoms like free speech, freedom of the press, and freedom of inquiry. Justin, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure.
Justin, I wonder if you could tell us, first of all, a little bit about CAFE, why you were involved in setting it up, and what you saw as the need for it in Canadian society.
Sure. Well, I think CAFE has the distinction of being, at this point, Canada's only registered educational charity with a focus on the health and welfare of boys, men, fathers, and families. And so largely what we do is we raise the public's consciousness level about men's issues, about a variety of issues like violence against men, parental alienation, the status of boys in schools in Canada, but also increasingly with the opening of the Canadian Centre for Men and Families, we've also switched gears a little bit, and now we focus on providing programs and services, largely men's health programs, for men who have a variety of needs. So we have, male-focused therapy and peer support, and we've just launched a legal aid clinic, which will support men and fathers who are dealing with a variety of legal issues in and around Toronto.
Yes, well, I'm sure that keeps you very busy, and I just mentioned some of the activities you're involved in. But Canada has a bit of a history, doesn't it? I mean, I think that was where White Ribbon was founded because of an incident, a massacre, actually, in Canada.
Yes, the mid-1980s, I forget the exact year, 1986, I think, they called Polytechnique, where a man shot to death a number of female engineers, quite a horrifying tragedy. And ever since then, on December 8th, that day has become, I guess it's, I didn't know it was international. I knew it was at least national in Canada, but I guess it's actually international, a day of remembrance and awareness regarding violence against women.
Yes, it has a branch in Australia, and it's really taken on a lot of momentum. It gets a lot of government funding and a lot of publicity. But just coming back to the issues in Canada, you also focus particularly on boys and men's issues.
Yes, and you asked about the sort of the need for our programs. Largely what we're doing is spreading awareness of gaps, both gaps in our public policy and also gaps in our social services. So I'll give you a very current example. In Ontario, our premier has just announced an initiative which will be looking at public policy recommendations to support women who are victims of sexual violence, who are victims of domestic abuse, who are victims of other kinds of trauma. And the way it's being framed as it's entirely a case of supporting women who are victimized by men, as though there are no male victims. So we have been launching our own campaign, both to spread public awareness of the fact that not only are there male victims of violence, including male victims of female perpetrated violence, but actually the statistics, our own government's statistics, show that half of domestic violence victims are men. So that is a public education campaign for us, but also having a facility for men's health and welfare, we are looking at ways to support male victims who are coming forward as a result of the attention that our campaign is bringing on this issue. So that's kind of an example of how our work simultaneously fosters public awareness and also provides a way for us to give back to the community through programs for men and their families.
Yes, and part of that campaign, I think, is you put billboards on buses and in the street to get the word out about the violence that is being committed towards men in families.
Yeah, so it's a billboard in downtown Toronto, which has the line, half of domestic violence victims are men, but no domestic violence shelters are dedicated to us. So there's sort of two, I think, equally shocking statements. The first is the unknown fact that men actually account for roughly half of the victims of violence. The other, I think, equally shocking fact is there are no services that are really dedicated to men. So right now, if you have a father, for example, who needs to flee a dangerous, abusive home environment, wants to take his kids away from an abusive and dangerous mother, for example, he has gotten no places that are open to him. So if he flees on his own, he's leaving his kids with a dangerous and violent person, or if he stays in order to protect his kids, then he is subject to violence. So it's a catch-22 that nobody should have to suffer through.
It's even harder. I mean, they talk about a dark figure for men reporting domestic violence, for women, rather, reporting domestic violence, but it's an even darker figure, I presume, for men, that they're less inclined to go forward and talk about this.
That's true, and when they do, as we've heard now, since the billboard campaign has run for the first time in a lot of these men's lives, they're actually finally talking about it. So one of the side effects of the campaign has been breaking the stigma, getting people acknowledging that they've been victims and looking finally for support that has long been overdue. And what they tell us is that when they have gone to the police, they have been treated as the guilty party. Mm. So the police, in a number of cases, if a male victim calls for support, the police will come to the house and will actually remove the man from the home, even though he's the victim. And that often means that they're leaving a dangerous and violent and abusive woman with children who now have nobody to protect them. And that is kind of the instructions that police are given, is to apply what they call a gender profile or a gender lens to incidents of domestic violence.
Yes, it's remarkable how similar the situation is in Australia to what you're describing in Canada. And yet you have done something about it. I think haven't you started the first male shelter?
That is our long-term goal. So we don't currently operate a shelter. We operate more of a men's health hub. So we have a number of activities like counseling and therapy and peer support and legal aid. And we are looking to partner with other agencies in Toronto who already offer shelters, whether it's shelters for homeless men or shelters for female victims of domestic violence. The one shelter that doesn't exist is for male victims of domestic violence. What we're aiming to do is partner with these existing shelters and try to broaden the scope of their programs so that they will have the facilities in place so that when men who are victims of violence contact us, there's a place that we can refer them. But that doesn't exist right now.
We spoke to Erin Pitsey on this program some time ago, who set up the first women's shelter in England and probably in the world. And she's suffered a bit of a backlash from feminists for now pushing to have male shelters. Have you suffered any sort of backlash yourself?
The backlash we suffered has largely been from people who are ignorant of our motives, and they think that by spreading awareness of male victims, we're somehow a threat to the existing social services and domestic abuse shelters for women. Nothing could be further from the truth. What we're looking to do is expand the existing social services, not take away any of them. What we'd like to do actually is partner with women's shelters and expand their programs to also welcome innocent male victims. So we actually think that what we're doing is very much in the same tradition as other groups who have a similar interest in gender equality and in supporting those in need.
Yes, and yet is there some resistance even to that? Do the women running the shelters, they don't want to facilitate any protection for the men?
Some volunteers and leaders of women's shelters have been hesitant to embrace the concept of male shelters, and I think they feel a threat that somehow talking about men as anything other than perpetrators will be a deterrent to women coming forward. The way I see it is it shouldn't matter if an individual is an innocent victim. I don't care about their gender. I want to get them help. But on the other hand, we have seen some brave women, brave feminists come forward who are willing, even though they have made their careers by helping female victims, they are willing to acknowledge that even in the course of their own professional work, they have come across many men who have fallen through the cracks. So one example is the Canadian Centre for Abuse Awareness, which is a very prominent, very established Canadian nonprofit organization, been around for years. It's largely focused on female victims of violence. But that particular organization has a very strong-willed and courageous executive director who reached out to us and offered to work with us on initiatives to expand programs like shelters so that men also get help. And I'm pleased to announce that the result of that collaboration, as well as working with other parties, we're going to be providing a conference at the end of the year specifically geared at male survivors of violence. And even the Ontario Provincial Police, it looks like, will be sponsoring this particular conference. So we have had some successes. It's not like we've been jumped on by everybody. We have had some allies in surprising places come forward, willing to broaden this conversation, willing to work with us in collaboration so that all victims, regardless of their gender, are able to get the help that they need.
Well, that's good. There's some good news coming through. And we're speaking with Justin Trottier, the board member of the Canadian Association for Equality. We're going to take a short break now, and this is a Canadian singer called Leon Redbone singing a song called Seduced.
I want to be seduced. Want a woman to take me out to dinner for two. Like to see her eyes get moody, flirting with the thought of what flirting ought to do. Like to be real cool, let her think about getting rid of me in bed. Here's a chat about Magna Carta, Quetta Vata, something Gandhi said. I'm a dinner, politely, all too slightly, if she tried to fondle my knees. But I'm relatively certain I'd compromise if I know me. I want to be seduced. Want a woman to talk to me suggestively. Want to hear her say she'll be with me tomorrow morning, drinking hot jasmine tea. Want her to make me laugh, make a point of touching me when she talks, leaving all the jealous men in the joint to mumble in the beer and gawk. I know it only happens when I'm napping, nodding in a reverie. Did I find myself a woman who wouldn't mind seducing me?
And welcome back to Dad's on the Air. Today we're speaking with Justin Trottier, the board member of the Canadian Association for Equality, and we're talking about a number of issues that are common to both Canada and Australia with regard to men's issues. Although, Justin, I don't think you like CAFE to be described as a men's rights organization.
Of what we're all about is a human rights organization, right? And we have a lot of women that work with us. As I just, you know, was explaining, we have a number of feminist and women's organizations who are actually working with us on a number of initiatives. For example, this conference for male victims of violence. And I just find that the men's rights language tends to make it more difficult rather than less difficult at creating collaborations because of the baggage that terminology tends to, you know, tends to have trailing behind it. So for me, it's more about public education about men's issues. It's about providing services to all victims who need help. And I want to do whatever I can, whether it's with the language we use or, you know, the way we frame these issues. I want to do whatever we can to make sure that we're able to build alliances rather than shutting down the possibility for collaboration by using limited terms that people sort of have already made up their mind about as a negative. we would shoot ourselves in the foot when we could, just by choosing different words, open ourselves to more collaborations.
So you're involved in numerous activities, and some of your areas of focus include the boys' crisis with education and bullying and suicide. Could you tell us just a little bit about your work in that area?
Yes, well, this is a big issue for us in Canada. I think it's actually one of the rare issues, men's issues, where there's actually more of an appetite at the government level to do something about it. And in particular, boys' literacy is really suffering in Ontario, and I think across Canada and probably in many other countries. As compared to girls, boys are doing worse and worse in many areas of study, in particular with reading and literacy. And the Ontario government, the Ministry of Education here, has actually started to acknowledge the problem, and they're now working with education researchers and teachers and parents and others who care about, you know, the status of boys to improve the reading scores that boys are getting in our schools. So that is one area where I think, probably because we're talking about, you know, younger men, there's a sense that when you're talking about boys, you know, they're seen as more innocent than men. I think once boys grow up and become men, then it's safer to sort of dismiss their concerns because apparently men have all the power. But when they're boys, it's kind of harder to say that they have all the power. So I think there's more of an appetite to investigate the status of boys. And I'm just glad that that's one men's issue that's getting a little bit more attention. There's still a lot to be done. And it's not just reading and literacy, but there are many ways in which boys are failing behind girls. But at least in that particular area, some programs are starting to be developed.
And is suicide becoming a growing problem for children in Canada?
Well, I think the statistics show that suicide is one of the leading causes of death for younger people, boys and girls. But there's certainly an epidemic, I would say, of male suicide at the age where boys and girls go through puberty, and then into early adulthood. We see the differences in the rates of suicide between males and females shoot up for males over females. So before puberty, at least in Canada, you know, suicide is there. It is one of the leading causes of death, but it's fairly comparable, the rates between boys and girls. But then I think what happens is, as men and women are struggling to adjust to their gender roles, we still have gender roles in our society, and that happens during puberty and early adulthood, men are not coping as well during that formative stage. And I think that's partly why male suicide ends up being four times the rate of female suicide at and after puberty. So this is an epidemic. It's unlike the status of boys in schools. It's not being acknowledged as a gender issue, even though the statistics are so obvious and so skewed that were they the other way around, were women three or four times more likely to commit suicide, I think we'd be talking about suicide as a woman's issue, but it's not looked at through a gender lens in any way in terms of our public policies or our social services. We have, for example, a number of government initiatives to deal with depression and suicide, but none of them, from what I've seen, and I've looked quite thoroughly, talk specifically about male suicide as an issue that needs to be confronted head on.
Yes, and we're speaking with Justin Trottier, a board member of the Canadian Association for Equality. So, Justin, what sort of when you're getting the word out? I mean, I think do you have a certain focus on universities to get the word out, or is it what means do you use to get it out?
Because a lot of our issues do pertain to younger men, and because a lot of our debates about gender issues do tend to happen at the universities and colleges in Canada, we have focused a lot of our attention on bringing events and awareness to the campuses. And there has been some blowback from that in the form of protests and I would even say riots at a couple of our earlier events. So we continue to focus on the universities, even though that has come with a number of challenges. I should say, though, in the last year, let's say, things have died down. I think our presence at the University of Toronto, for example, where we have most of our events, and it's, you know, the biggest university in Canada, so we're glad to be able to have a lot of programs there. The protests have essentially disappeared. and I think we've kind of gone mainstream. There is a sense that men's issues are here to stay. These are valid. These are important human rights issues. And this conversation at this particular university, at least, has become a staple that the student body can expect. We're going to be having these programs on a regular basis long into the future.
Yes, there is a chair in Europe, but do you think we're still a little way away from having a chair for men's studies at Toronto University?
Oh, yes. Most of our universities in Canada, and U of T is no exception, have women's studies. At U of T, it's called Gender Studies and Women's Studies. There are a couple of programs that study men, but it's studied through the lens of women, of women's studies, through the lens of feminism. There's nothing that I know of at U of T or nearby in Canada that looks at men on their own terms as anything other than sort of the factor that men play in the lives of women. So that's something we're struggling with. There are a couple of professors that are advisors to our organization who are looking at creating a male studies department eventually at a number of universities in Canada. For now, their effort has taken the form of a journal called the New Male Studies, I guess, to distinguish it from the traditional role that men's studies has played as an appendage of women and gender studies, which is not what we're after here. We want to look at men's issues on their own terms, just as CAFE itself looks at men's issues on their own terms.
Yes, well, look, I admire the work you're doing, Justin. I don't know where you get your energy from, but I know you're in the press, you're on TV, you're on radio, you've got posters, you're definitely getting the word out, and from Dads on the Air in Australia, all we can do is wish you greater success as you press on with what seems to be a basic issue of equality.
Well, I appreciate that, and may I say likewise that I hope that both of our organizations or initiatives continue to flourish. These are important issues. As I've said a few times, but it's worth reiterating, men's issues are human rights issues. When men and boys and fathers get the help that they need, then families are stronger and communities are healthier and everybody benefits.
Definitely. So, Justin, could I ask you, we always ask our guests to pick a song at the end of the interview. Could you perhaps tell us which song you picked and why you picked it?
So I picked the song Superman's Dead by Our Lady Peace. It's one of my favorite bands. It's a Canadian band. I think that's appropriate because, you know, all the work that, that CAFE does comes with a particular Canadian flair. We're very interested in issues that boys and men face in Canada. You know, obviously, we're interested in the plight of all human beings all over the world, but we think that Canada has particular challenges and that a lot of what we're doing in Canada can be used as a model in other nations. So we're very, very proudly Canadian. And the other thing I like about this song in particular is, again, it's about Superman being dead. So it's about men in particular realizing that they don't have to be Superman, that they don't have to be, you know, strong all the time, and they don't have to take it like a man. They can be vulnerable. They can, you know, need help from other people. And, you know, the Billboard campaign and other initiatives that we do are largely geared at breaking down the stigma that males often face that prevents them from getting the help that they need. So Superman's dead. Nobody has to suffer alone. Everybody needs help sooner or later, and it's okay to, you know, come forward with your experiences, that they're valid, and that if you need help, that's also valid. That's sort of my interpretation of the song and, you know, my justification for much of the work that we do.
Very well stated. So this is Superman's Dead by Our Lady Peace.
Till you break, you're happy 'cause you smile, but how much can you break? An ordinary boy, an ordinary name, but ordinary's just not good. King. Why?
And that's the end of the show for Dads on the Air this week. You can browse the archive or contact us on the website. Stay in touch and leave any comments via Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter. I look forward to your company again next time. And in the meantime, I'd like to particularly thank our guest today, Justin Trottier from the Canadian Association for Equality. Justin, thank you for being on the program.
Well, thanks so much for the opportunity.
And we'll see you all again next week on Dads on the Air.